Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion featuring a variety of automotive subjects, interviews, special guests, and stories, hosted by the Round 6 Gearheads, Brian Stupski, Brad King, Alex Welsh, and Eric Hibbs. On Episode 6, we welcome world-renowned painter and owner of Mix Paint in Pomona, California, Mr. Mick Jenkins. Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Brad.
I'm Alex.
I'm Eric.
And with us tonight, we're fortunate to have all the way from just outside of London, England, fresh off the worldwide tour, Mick Jagger.
No, wrong Mick.
Yeah, Mick Jones.
Mick Jones. Right, Mick Jones. Mick Jones. So,
no. No?
Mickey David Mouse?
Do you need help with that?
Mickey Dolenz.
Oh. Mickey Dolenz. Yeah, now I just went completely down.
Wow.
I think I'm going home.
All kidding aside, I was going to say pleasured, but that sounds really bad after the conversation we just had about prison. Okay.
Speak for yourself, Brian.
This beats last week by going sideways even earlier. We didn't even get through the intro. We're fortunate to have with us quite possibly one of the most talented custom painters in the universe, Mr. Mick Jenkins. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. I'll put that straight before we go any further. I'm not a custom painter. I'm just a painter.
Ah. Ooh. He's
so shall I leave now?
He's just
well, I guess that wraps this
with that said, thanks for listening to the Round 6 Podcast. Yeah, right. We'll catch you next week with a custom painter.
Brad, you said this guy was a custom painter.
I'm sorry.
He was accustomed to painting. Oh.
There you go.
Yes, with a man who's accustomed to painting.
We're going to screw that up for you.
The lowest ever rated episode. So.
Thank you. So you finally take a little bit of a break after the Grand National. I know you guys were thrashing on getting a bunch of stuff done. Are you guys kind of taking a little bit of a breather now?
Not really, actually, because it's always on to the next one that was bubbling over in the background. So we're thrashing on two more projects now with deadlines. So.
Cool. What do you have in the shop? What are you working on right now?
We've got a 55 Chevy that's going to be going to the Riddler next year. That's a huge, huge program, which we've been working on for some time. The wagon overlapped, and we pushed that out first. And then we've got a bunch of stuff, but that's the main one at the moment that we're focused on.
And since it's a Riddler car, you can't tell us anything about it.
That's right, yeah. Sworn to secrecy.
Yeah.
I can't show you.
It's actually a 57 Chevy, but you said 55. I get you.
I know that's okay. Nobody listens to this.
Yeah.
But it looks like a 56, yeah.
Right.
But with 58 quarter panels, it's going to be great.
And an Edsel grill.
No,
it's a Eleanor Mustang 55 Chevy.
Oh, it's a pretty cool project. It's there's no standard bodywork left on it at all. Everything's been modified. There isn't a single piece on the car that you could replace with something off the shelf anywhere. Going from the headlight lenses through to the seats, the whole body shell, chassis, suspension, most of it's all one-off parts, which we haven't done. We're just doing the body and paint work on it.
But not custom paint. You're just doing the paint.
Just the paint. Yeah.
Okay.
So what kind of a car is it? Like a pro street car or kind of more like the pro touring style or a custom or what kind of car?
None of those three, actually. It's just...
Really?
Yeah, it's just I guess I would call it a hot rod 55. It's not it's not a pro touring car. I don't know. There's actually a real pigeonhole for it. It's just extremely worked over 55 Chevy.
Is the car out of Southern California or is it from somewhere else?
Yes, it is. Yeah, relatively local car.
Oh, okay. Usually you don't see as many California guys compete for that trophy. That's a lot of the East Coast guys are really, really fighting for that one. That's good to see the West Coast have some stuff. That's cool.
Yeah, this guy wants to go straight to the top, so that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys have had this car in the shop for quite a while?
Yeah, on and off. I think we've probably had it 4.5 years, on and off.
Wow.
Because every time it gets to a point, they decide they want to upgrade something else. I mean, it's, since the first time we had it in, it's had a complete new front and rear suspension made for it, all one-off components that they've done themselves. You know, stuff like that takes a lot of time.
Sure. Yeah, if you think about a car like that, that somebody's putting together for in that long of a period of time for that particular award that they're going for, I'll bet you there's a lot of direction changes. You've got to be kind of ready to make some 180-degree turns on a car like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've done some incredible stuff. They've even made their own headlamps from the reflectors, lenses, housings, bezels.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, and when it's all said and done, will it really, you'll look at it and go, that's definitely a 55 Chevy, or do you think it'll be radical enough to where it'll kind of almost disguise itself a little bit?
No, you won't mistake it for 55.
Okay.
For sure. It's going to be one of those cars you stand and look at and trying to figure out all the pieces that have been changed, but it's everything.
Yeah, it's one of those, if you really know a 55 Chevy, you'll know it's definitely a different car.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
See, I love that. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I love that when you look at a car and you know it's changed, but you can't pick out exactly what, you know, you can pick out the pieces, but it's got a whole different feel. It's like the manufacturer should have built it that way. I love
it. I've always felt that's when a guy gets it right. You know, 9 out of 10 people may walk right by it and never catch it, but that one guy that stands there and looks at it for 20 minutes and goes, I can't figure what is the difference. When you got it. That's when you did it.
You just described that 57 Wagon that we finished.
Oh, yeah.
It's so understated that most people don't get it. They just see it's a nice wagon, but they don't get all the modifications.
Yeah, that car, if somebody explained everything that was done to that car, I mean, they would just be blown away because there's so much work. But at the end product, it looks like something the factory would have done. It's that nice.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, proportionally, because usually when guys go to that extent and they're changing a bunch of things, they always have that, well, I can't say always, but oftentimes you'll see that one detail that just doesn't work and it catches your eye and the whole flow of the car starts to get compromised because of one design detail. And on that car, you can't find one. It's right. It's done right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a trademark of Pure Vision. We did that for Pure Vision Design. The owner's Bob Florine of ARP, but Steve at Pure Vision's got he has a good eye for that stuff, and they came up with a recipe that works.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool.
That's Steve Strope, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Nice color choices, too, on that car. It really works well together. It's nice. Because I think when we saw the rendering, when they had the open house at the open house at the
Father's Day.
Like,
come on, spit it out.
you know, in the rendering, I could have swore I remember the car being red and white. So when I finally saw the car, and I'm like, this isn't red. You know, this is more of a cinnamon color. But it's got a tinge of red in it. It's really a neat color.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an Aston Martin color.
You know, there's something about the Brits. I love their color palettes that they use. I just think the Aston Martin color palette is just phenomenal. I mean, it's beautiful colors. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, very understated normally.
They've got the cleanest, gray, because I remember you guys did the Camaro for Steve and that 70-73 Camaro that they did.
Yeah.
I think that was an Aston Martin color, and that was such a clean color.
Yeah, it was for a plain old gray. It looks something different from the car.
Beautiful. I mean, it was really nice. I mean, the metallic, and it's very, very fine. It's really nice color. Yeah, you know, the other thing that I was going to mention, too, is at the open house, this is when the old Toyota truck was back in the back, and you guys were still doing metalwork on it. And I have never, in my life, I've only seen two of that body style of Toyota truck. I don't know what year it is, maybe early 60s?
62. Yeah.
And you will never find another one, you know, out about. The other one that I saw was so thrashed. We saw it at El Mirage, and it was one of Brad's buddies. He had it.
Oh, I forgot that. That's right.
Remember that one? I mean, yes. It was really beat, but it was kind of cool just because it was, you know, an old Toyota. And then you see that one. And I looked that car over at the Grand National, and man, did it turn out, our truck, man, did it turn out nice.
Yeah,
I saw pictures of that. I know that you've done that.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Eric, it is beautiful.
It's way past the regular Toyota truck.
Yeah.
Well, definitely. Yeah, interesting story. That car came from, or that truck, I should say, originally came from Japan. The owner lives in Australia, bought it in Japan. I'm assuming he must have had one as a kid or something. Shipped it to Australia, then shipped it to Pure Vision for them to do the restoration. And then we got the truck from there. And the thing was so rotten, it's pretty much a throwaway. I was looking for a tailgate to replace the one on the truck that we were trying to bring back to life, and found a, I think it was a 64 of the same model with 52,000 original miles on it. They've been in a museum or a collection somewhere. And so we ended up using the majority of that and making it right-hand drive by taking the firewall out of the original truck. So there's not a whole lot left of the Japanese one, or the one sourced from Japan. It's mainly a nicer truck to start with, I should say, after throwing the first one away.
I can't imagine trying to find anything for one of those. I mean, just any piece for one of those trucks. Were they more popular in overseas, you know, versus the U.S.? I mean, could you find them easier to find parts in Australia than the U.S. on something like that?
Yeah, I guess so. And they had the stock motor rebuilt. They ended up finding a camshaft in Turkey. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, crazy stuff. They were pretty scarce over here, and I think that was their first commercial vehicle. So, baby steps over here, I guess. But yeah, there's a bunch of them in Australia. Why he got that one from Japan, I don't know.
It looks like a little international, doesn't it?
It does. Yes.
Kind of, yeah. Sort of, yeah.
It does. It's a square, boxy look to it, yeah. It's got some really unique, like, fender scoops, and really, it's really a cool truck.
Yeah.
Look at some pictures up on the website.
Yeah.
What green is that?
That's another Aston Martin color, funny enough.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's a really pretty green.
It's called apple tree green.
Wow.
Nice. So, speaking of, you know, kind of rare stuff and obviously unusual stuff, what is what was the rarest or most unusual vehicle you've had the pleasure of laying some color on?
Well, that's a tough question. We've done a few oddball things. We did a semi truck back here, early 2000 for a movie shoot. We had to paint the front three-quarter view of the truck. They went and rented a white truck, and we had to paint it black. And then they stuck chrome-plated 4-inch nails all over it for one shoot for a – actually, it wasn't a movie. It was a poster. And then bring it back, break all the nails off, repaint it white again.
Sounds like a poster for Hellraiser or something.
Yeah, kind of thing. Yeah, that's probably the oddest job we've done. But as far as cars go, we've done a couple in the last few years. We did a 1959 Pegaso, which was a Spanish supercar of the day. They were pretty rare.
What was that yellow, the real pale yellow one?
We also did, a 55 Alfa Romeo Boana Coupe, which was one of one.
Oh,
well, actually, it was one of two. I take that back. It was one of two, and the other one was wrecked. So it's the only one left on the planet.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw that one. Like, what is this car? Because it didn't look like anything else I had ever seen. Definitely very unique.
Now, on the old Italian, mid-50s Italian stuff, a lot of that stuff was hand-built. What's it like to do body work and trying to get the thing to gap and get everything square? Because, you know, I understand on a lot of them, the left sides don't match the right sides.
Any side.
Okay. You saw that as you were working it?
Well, the situation with those cars, we work for another company called Fast Cars. They do the majority of the sheet metal work. In fact, like 99% of it. And we just do the final kind of brush up around some edges. But, it's a lot of work because those things, I mean, typically a car from that era, if it's had any use, it's been beat inside out to start with.
Yeah.
So they're hand-making sections for it and panels if necessary.
and some of those cars are just so beautiful from the outside until you open them up and look inside the panels and you look at it. They're not really that pretty. I mean, they were put together. I mean, exterior wise, they're absolutely beautiful. Underneath the skin, they're not as pretty in some spots.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the Pegaso we did, it looked like a blacksmith had made it with a rock and a stick, and it was absolutely horrendous inside. And just the way it was made, it looked like it was stick welded together and smashed up with a rock. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But as you say, the outside finished is a beautiful car.
Yeah, we've got a friend that does a lot of metal work, and somebody brought him an ISO. I think it was an ISO Grifo, late 60s. It ones with the Corvette engines in them.
Yeah.
And it looked pretty good. The owner was from Argentina. He brought it to a shop down in somewhere down in, I think, Long Beach. And the metal work was pretty extensive, so they sent it up to Bob. And they stripped it down, and I don't know who did all the Bondo work on this car, but they were pretty amazing because they were basically, they built the sculpture. Once everything was cut out of the way, it was horrific. Am I right, Brad?
Oh, it was a Michelangelo creation. It was carved out of
mud. I've never seen anything like it. It was absolutely sculpted out of Bondo, but once they cut it all apart, it looked like the car had been in a wreck on a racetrack, and it looked like it spun and hit every panel as it was spinning. It was wadded up on every corner.
There wasn't a spot that hadn't been folded up. It was a mess.
It was horrific. He was doing whole door skins. He did a new deck lid skin. He needed to build a new taillight panel. Wow. And yeah, same thing. You get up underneath you look at the outside and the shape of it's just absolutely gorgeous. And you look up underneath and it's just like, wow. It's just like you're saying, it looked like it built with popsicle sticks and glue.
Can we coin a phrase right here? If we ever find another car like that, especially an Italian car, we should just refer to those as Bondocellis.
I love the way they look. I don't think I'd want to work on one, but I'd love to have one sitting in my garage if I was a lottery winner. I just think they're
beautiful. I'd love to have one sitting in your garage.
Okay.
You
don't want a Bondo bucket sitting in your garage. No.
They're beautiful. They're elegant. They look like they look like a continuation of an early 60s Ferrari that just kind of lived into the early 70s.
The funny thing about this car, this ISO, this guy that had it, he was from Argentina, and he bought it probably 25 years ago, and he said, I couldn't decide between this car and a 275 Ferrari. And he goes, I just couldn't decide. And I decided on this one. I'm thinking to myself, dude,
that
275 is worth about 100 times what this car is worth.
But, I think he figured that out down the road that he made the wrong decision.
I got to say, that ISO's a beautiful car. It's an absolutely beautiful car. It just doesn't have the collectability of a Ferrari, but it is coming up in value. It just they'll never meet. I mean, they'll never match each other in value. But it was funny how he couldn't decide which one he wanted.
Wow. He would have been better off just buying both.
Yeah. And that would be, if you could afford it. Yeah.
So Mick, what's your favorite car you've worked on recently?
I think for me, the stroke car, the 69 Mustang Fastback, called the Anvil Mustang. Mm-hmm. That's probably my favorite car.
Was that the white one?
Yeah.
That's
a nice car.
It was a cool car. It was in Fast and Furious, I think, 6 or 7. One of the other is the one that was supposedly run over by a tank. But it's just, it's so understated and clean. Yeah, very cool. That would work for me.
You said that was a 69 Mustang?
Yes, yeah.
That's probably my favorite body style Mustang. It's got all the right shape to it.
That's when we were sitting down here. We were sitting there talking to Steve at that Father's Day a couple years ago when it was sitting in here.
Are you sure it was that one or it wasn't the early mid-60s Fastback that had the crazy IndyCar motor in it?
The Martini Mustang.
That's the Martini.
Oh, so which one?
Martini 65.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. You're right. Wrong car. My mistake.
Like what? 6 spoke wheels on it. I think it's the one that I want to say it won like the Ford Design Award in 2010.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
It's got those Lola style 6 spoke wheels. Oh yeah.
Different. Yeah. I'm thinking of a different car, but yes, I know that car.
Okay. Yeah, it is the car. The Martini style one had 4 spoke wheels on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Well, you guys have been doing your homework.
Now the internet's a beautiful thing.
I'm sitting here. I studied all night long, and Eric's just like, I'll just Google this. That's nice.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.
You know.
Standing. I'm just going to sit here and keep on patting myself on the back for coining phrases. That's all I got tonight.
Did you get another one?
I don't have another one yet. I'll come up with one later. Okay. I was trying to come up with a good joke for martini and putting cars together, but I've got nothing.
Well, okay, I got a question. What's the most hours you've put? I mean, this 55 is going to be one of those things.
That is, but I mean, to date, the record belongs to the Packard. Good Lord, I forgot the name of it.
Troy Lane car?
Yeah, the
red
car,
one that won the Miura thing.
Yeah, the Mulholland
Speed. Mulholland Speed, right.
Yeah. Yeah, we had, for our end of it, 4,200 hours.
Whoa.
Which is a lot of hours in 7 months.
Yeah. Plus I'll let the audience multiply that by the shop rate.
Okay, so that's metric, right? Or is that
standard? Yeah. Months? Okay. Yeah, and right-hand drive as well.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah, it's a lot of hours. But, I mean, it's a big car, and it needed to be on the money. And the underside is done to the same level as the top side, just that nobody ever sees it. So a huge project.
Wow. So, like in that case, I mean, if you get a car like that, that you've got as much time into the bottom side as you do the top side, do you, it's a job. It's like any job. You get paid to do your thing. Do you ever feel a little bit of regret, though, for putting as much time and effort into the bottom side, knowing it's never going to be seen? Or is it kind of a pride thing?
No, I love it. I got paid for it. Sorry, that's a joke. It's nice to be able to go, you know, further than you would normally go. And you know, the owner appreciates it. It's just a shame that no one really will ever see it. Even if you lay it on your back, you can't see underneath that car. If it's on their display stand, which cut away on one side, you can get a glimpse of it. But, yeah, that's about as far as it goes. But even the chassis and everything, it's all to the same level, all color sanded, rubbed out, all the fender brackets, every piece of it. In a way, it's a waste, but it achieved what it was supposed to do on the day, so it all worked.
You know, I always wondered with that car, at the level of detail that it is, did they bring the chassis to you? Did you guys assemble the car at your place, or did they take all those perfectly painted parts and load them in a truck and drive them to Hollywood?
No, actually, they did assemble it here because it was on the run-up to the Grand National, and so it was put together here, the final assembly anyway, and then detailed here and then straight across to the show.
Wow. So,
yeah,
so a lot of hours going on, a lot of round-the-clock stuff, and I think probably on average we were doing 14 to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for the last month.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's by the time it's done, you kind of sick of looking at it, to be honest.
Yeah, sure.
Get it out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
So I'd imagine that, you know, putting together a car of that scale, that caliber, that as they're assembling it, you're going to have to touch up some things.
No.
No?
No, we didn't actually, no, on that car, no. Wow. We left the fenders and the front sheet metal was left off the car while it was having the interior put in it. Then it came back to my shop and we didn't do all of it. They had their team here as well, put the rest of the bodywork back on it. And everybody was on eggshells because they knew, you know, one chip or a scratch at this stage of the game, it isn't going to get fixed in time for the show. So,
oh, wow.
It worked out really well, yeah.
Lots of tape. Tape, tape, tape,
yeah.
Tape.
And bubble wrap.
Well, I can imagine doing all that work and loading it up and then watching it go on a rollback truck away to the upholsters, and you're praying that, please, I hope they don't smack the edge of the car when they're putting the seat in or bump into it. Because you hear about stories like that. I remember the guys at Boyd used to talk about when they'd send their stuff over to a well-known upholstery guy, you know, they wound up renaming him. His nickname was Mr. Chips. That's what they called him.
Yeah, actually, I had a very interesting go around. So the very first car I did when I came here that Dan Fink Metalworks had built, and we painted it, or I painted it, actually, I was working on my own then. Came out super nice, went to a well-known interior shop, and someone stuck a drill. It was a Model A sedan with a filled roof, and they stuck a drill right in the middle of the roof. It didn't go through, but it made like a proper nipple, right dead bang in the center of the roof. And when the owner saw it straight away, and he said, "What the hell's that?" Oh, it came from the paint shop like that.
Oh. Yeah. God damn Mick Jenkins.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah. Didn't work. Yeah, that stuff does happen. But typically nowadays, I think with the higher end guys, we typically use Gabe exclusively if we have any say in the matter. It's those guys know how to deal with it.
Yeah, and they do great work.
Yeah, and they're only working on high end stuff, so they know that they've got to what they've got to do.
They know the rules.
And I think their shop, there's really it's just Gabe and his two sons and maybe one or two other guys. It's the same guys that have been there for 25 years.
Yes. So yep.
You're not getting a big turnover of guys, new guys and stuff.
So. Yeah, it's pretty much a family affair down there.
Yep.
Which
yep.
is great.
Yep. What you're coming to the States? I mean, did you have a big background in paint before you came here, or did you get a lot of your apprenticeship here in the U.S.?
No, I actually did an apprenticeship when I left school at a Jaguar British Leyland dealer, and I was always into cars. I found my first copy of Hot Rod magazine at junior school. I found it in the classroom when I was, I think I was 9 or 10. So I was screwed from there on in.
Wow. Do you still remember the issue? I mean, if you found that issue, would you buy it if you could find another one?
I do have two copies of it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's very cool. So that, I just got into, for whatever reason, the Hot Rod thing got me, and it's not a big, it's a hobby over there, not an industry.
Yeah.
So, I got into it, and then later on in life, when the opportunity came up to move here, I would, at that stage, I was running collision shops for some Ford dealerships in England. Mm-hmm. But it was a great opportunity for me to come here and be able to work on the stuff I was passionate about rather than stuff that was just a business.
Yeah.
And that's gone full circle. Now it's a business. But no, it's coming from there to here, it's an incredible opportunity, to be able to get involved in these projects, especially at the level we're at now, mm-hmm. where you're working with the big boys. It's pretty cool.
How did you climb that ladder from, going from working on, production cars at a Ford dealer and coming here and then working your way up to working on, kind of the upper echelon of show cars and things like that?
I guess I got lucky. I mean, I've always been pretty thorough in when I'm doing stuff myself as far as, hot rods or body and paintwork. And I came here. Kind of funny now, but I came in 95 and a friend of mine said, well, what are you doing? Are you staying here or are you just a vacation? And I quit work. I had a really good career there, quit work. And I came here for, I thought 3 months just to see how things unfold, what happens. And I ended up working in a little restoration shop for $6 an hour, not knowing whether that was good or bad. And I just walked away from a super well-paid job with all the toys and add-ons. And I think I worked for them for about 6 months and realized that it was going nowhere. And I got an offer from two of my friends worked for Dan Fink. And they hooked me up with him and I got to paint, I think, the last three cars they built. And it just kind of snowballed from there, really. Did some business with Alan Budnick, which was also really good for me. And he introduced me to Chip Foose. One specific car from the 0032 car that won the Grand National back in 2000. Mm-hmm. Did some stuff for SoCal at the time and then ended up getting a job for SoCal running their fab shop and race car shop for 4.5 years. And then ended up leasing the building and doing what I'm doing now. So it's great because I've gotten to meet so many cool people and legends of the industry. Pete Chaboris being the highlight of it, really.
and myself.
And Braddles, of course.
See?
Yeah, we're glad Brad got to meet Pete as well.
Yeah, there's always yin and yang, right?
So one of the cars that I believe that you had a hand in that's one of my favorites is the blue 4950 Merc with a white Carson top.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a convertible top, isn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't a Carson.
No, it's a convertible for real. Yeah, that was interesting. That was the second job I did for SoCal. And we'd done all the body work and prep work at my shop. And that was about the time I started work for them. So we finished it back here and then I painted it here.
So yeah. That would have been 2002, 2003, somewhere in there?
No, I think actually that was 2000.
Was it?
2000, I was working on it, not that it was finished.
The reason that I remember that car is because it was just finished. I was down at SoCal Speed Shop, and Tony Thacker was walking me through and showing me a few things. That car had just been finished, and it was laying underneath a plastic sheet. And he very, very gently pulled back the sheet and let me look at it. And wow, I'd never seen paint like that before. And it absolutely blew me away.
Yeah, it was a privilege to work on a car like that. But you almost can't go wrong with the shape of one of those cars. It's hard to make it look bad.
You've never seen me paint.
I've seen some of Brad's stuff.
Hey.
Well, that's where you got to ask. Now, this would be a good question with two you guys who are into paint. So, Brad, what width broom would you have used to lay the paint on that car?
It's a big car, probably a push broom.
Use the chimney sweep broom for the corners, on the inside, the hard to reach places.
Oh, right on. I'm taking notes.
There you go. Sweet broom.
So what do you have in the wings? Personal projects.
Oh, I don't know if I want to talk about that. My personal project, I have a 32 Roadster that I've been nearly building for 6 years, which is finally getting somewhere. I just had a motor gone through and built. I have a stack-injected big block, which was fired up last week.
Oh, I did not know this.
Ooh,
so how's it sound? Is it bark?
It barks. Yeah, it's all a bit too much, but it's not too much. Probably not a car you're going to drive very far, but it will be fun when you do.
Well, you could just need a bigger fuel tank.
Yeah, I remember seeing that car at the open house. I'm looking at this thing going, if I was going to build one of these, this is exactly the car I would build. I mean,
it's
got everything I would do to one. And the Crower injected big block, that just puts it right over the top. I mean, that's just awesome.
That was fun because I remember telling Alex about it. It's like, wait till you see this car. He's like, what? I said, we got to go find it. It's like, here it is. He goes, this is Mick's car. Yes, this is Mick's car.
Yeah. Mick just moved right to the top of the list.
Wow.
I'm not sure about that. I just knew I had to do something to it that would make it stand out a bit. And the injection was it, really.
Yeah.
Just putting a big block in a Roadster is pretty cool. I mean,
it's a stick car, too, isn't it?
No. Okay. No, I'm not that brave.
Automatic.
They might need two hands on that one.
And I think in the past we talked about it, and you were talking about black. Were you thinking black? Still the same still black color?
Yeah, I think everything I've done for me over the years has been black one way or the other.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm obliged to, really. It's the hardest one to make look right. And
exactly. Yeah, it's the best calling card a painter could ever have.
Yeah. Hopefully it won't be mine for too long.
Oh, you're considering? Okay. You're going to build it and turn it?
I think I'm already bored with it, to be honest, because it's taken so long. So, which is probably not a good way of looking at it, but that's how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
You put a motorcycle rack on the back of it and you haul your bike around. See, that's perfect.
Do you do any motorcycle work at all? Do people bring tanks and fenders to you or anything like that, or are you mostly car stuff?
It's mostly car. I think I've only ever done three, and one of them was mine as far as bikes go. It hasn't evolved, and I'm not, as I said before, I'm not a custom painter as such, so mm-hmm. normally that stuff, they're looking for more artwork, more upgrades, street than mine. Yeah. So, doesn't really happen.
So how many AMBR cars have you painted?
Three.
So you won. You won three times.
Well, I only painted them. I didn't win. But...
Well, no, but the cars you painted won. So yeah. You won three of them.
Yeah, the 0032 car and then Bill Lindig's Indy Special.
Okay.
And then the
red one. Though.
The Mulholland Speedster.
So to our listeners, that's the recipe. If you want to win, you need to get a hold of Mick and, he can paint your Roadster, your Yugo, and you can win.
Let's just... this could is be a Yugo Roadster, though.
That's right. You got to cut the top off of it.
Yugo Roadster.
People are going to argue that it's not a true Roadster. So is there, how often does somebody bring a project to you and you just it's not something that fits your shop and you turn them away? I mean, does that happen often?
Yeah, it does happen. I wouldn't say it was often because we're not, you know, have people lined up outside the door, but yeah, it's an awkward one really, because you want to help everybody, but by the same token, it is a business. So I kind of tried on my business card. I have fine refinishing for those that know the difference. That's a kind of a polite way of saying you come in with your eyes open and know what you want and be able to afford it, because we can do all of it. But in reality, we're not a price level that suits most people.
Yeah, it's not an Earl Scheib shop.
No, because if you want it, my guys work to a level now and it's hard to back down from there. So I can't expect them to turn out tens and then turn around and do a five or a six. It just doesn't work. They'll continue to do the right thing, and I end up owning half the car, or feeling like I do. So it's not a good situation.
But, I know in a lot of paint shops, it's difficult to keep help, because a lot of guys get to a certain level, then they decide, well, I can do this on my own. Do you find it difficult to keep a team for periods of time?
No, actually, I don't have a problem with that. My problem is actually finding them in the first place. One of my guys has worked with me for 20 years. The other one, 12. And I think the newest one I've got of any skill level that actually, that's going to sound wrong, but that actually works for me right now, has been here for about a year. But I'm really picky about who I employ, so it's hard to find anybody that meets the criteria to begin with, and I won't take anybody and who thinks they know how and I haven't seen what they've done, because typically they're not much good anyway. There's so many people out there who talk up a storm and can't deliver the goods.
Yeah. I can imagine in a business like that, when you're trying to achieve a particular level and you hire somebody and you've got to give them some sort of probationary period so you can feel them out and see what they can do, and it'd be kind of risky at times just to turn somebody loose on a high-end project and you find out this particular person just isn't meeting your standard.
Yeah, and well, funny enough, you can figure out pretty quick. I would say the first day typically.
You just watch their technique, yeah.
Yeah, and their attitude with the other guys too. I mean, if they come in with the old ego going, then that doesn't work straight away. They can go.
Right.
But it's interesting. I've had someone who was considered as a famous local custom painter who was looking for a job. The guy couldn't even turn – the first day he was 4 hours late. Said he got lost. And it just got worse from there. No tools. And then he's trying to bribe my guys to do the bodywork on the car so that he could paint them later, thinking I might not notice he stood in the corner of the workshop for 6 months at a time. But
without a brick, of course.
Uh-huh. And paid. Hourly. Yeah. So it's pretty easy to figure out. But, it's still finding anybody who knows enough and is not full of themselves and is professional about their work and their work ethic, it's tough.
Yeah, there's been times that Brad and I have talked about it. You know, he'd be being down there working in your shop all the time, and he has a lot of respect for the guys that you've got working on your crew. He just talks about some of the techniques and the way that they do their work, and in the paint jobs, they show. I mean, the quality that those guys do.
Yeah, I'm really, really fortunate to have a good team. And now obviously it's hard, not hard, but I have to work to keep them engaged and here still, but you just have to pay him too much money is what it boils down to.
Yeah. No, a painter of your caliber, do you find it, is it difficult when you go to say a show and you see another paint job, is it difficult for you to walk away from it? Or do you like look at it and start critiquing it in your mind, you know, not saying anything out loud, but in your mind, you've got this checklist going, well, he missed that, or he forgot this, or I could see a sanding scratch, or do you do that, or you just kind of just you know, take each paint job as it is and, you know, just accept that that's just the way some are.
No, to be honest with you, I don't really look too hard at the paint job as a paint job. For me, if I go to a car show, I'm looking at the car overall. You know, if it sits right and it's my kind of car, I don't want to get too close because you can find, you know, you can find issues with everything.
Sure.
So I'm looking at the car, not the paint job as such, unless someone's out there bragging and doing all their puffed out stuff, I'll go and have a look. But you can always, there's always stuff to be found. It's almost impossible to do a perfect paint job.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, I don't know. I've seen quite a few come out of your shop.
No, I don't think so. You must have the wrong person.
You know, it's funny though. You've got to be your own worst critic. And what all of us would look at and could not find fault with at all, you're like, oh, look over here and it's this. And you could be looking at something, pointing it out, and we're like, nah, I don't see that.
But that's good.
Yes. Yes. Keeps the paychecks coming, right?
Yeah. It's tough actually because, yeah, you are your own worst critic, and you have to be, because otherwise you just run into the rest of the crowd. I mean, there's a lot of people doing some super nice paintwork out there, and you've got to work to stay, I'm not saying we're at the top of the heap, but to have a presence in the market. So, yeah, we end up going further than we possibly need to, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, on the right car, it works. So that's how the results come.
In the last 20 years, if you've noticed that paint quality, paint jobs and finished car, the quality has gotten so much better?
Yes. Yeah. Big time, actually. And it's going to sound boastful, and it's not meant to be, but I remember when we did the 0032, there were very few nice black cars around, and that was color sanded and buffed underneath and everything. And it, when that was at the show, I mean, it knocked me back a little bit because I wasn't paying attention to much else at that level out there, and I was really proud that car looked, you know, it's head and shoulders above most of the other paintwork that I'd seen out there. And nowadays, you are almost lost in the crowd.
Yeah, you notice that when you go to a show, say like the Grand National, and you're looking around and just some phenomenal paint jobs. I mean, they're everywhere. Yeah.
Everywhere.
And then, you know, you go into all the lowriders are at, and then you've got paint and you've got graphics, and that stuff is just mind-blowing. I mean, it's just, oh.
Yeah, that stuff puts me in shape. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
You know, we always kind of make that a special effort whenever we go to that show because, you know, years ago, if you would have said, hey, let's go look at some lowriders, I would have said, nah, that's just not my thing. I love that building. I mean, that's one of my favorite buildings out of all of them because you're looking at these cars, and they're just phenomenal. I mean, you look at it and you go, the first thing you think of is, how long did it take to lay this graphic out? How much tape did these guys use? How many books of gold leaf did they use? How much one shot did they use? It's just, it is amazing what those guys do.
Yeah, and how can anybody pay for it? Because I know how long it takes to do what we do nicely, and that's a whole different world all over again.
All I can figure is a lot of these guys just trade work amongst themselves. You know, one guy's a painter, one guy's an upholstery guy, one guy's an engraver. One, you know, maybe that's how they do it. That's all I can figure.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah,
because there's a zillion hours.
Well, then you got to think about the material cost too. I mean,
Because that's, I mean, that on its own is scary nowadays. Most people have no idea what it costs in materials to paint a car. It's that would blow most people out the door.
That's a good question. In the last 10 years, what kind of increase have you seen in material cost?
I don't know. It's gone up a lot, but it didn't jump at any particular stage or that I remember. But I mean, now
slowly ratcheting itself up over time.
Oh yeah, some of the stuff we're buying paint that's $1,000 or $1,100 a gallon. And that's just the color, no activator, no reducers, no clear coat, just the color. I mean, the packet, for an example, is over $13,000 in paint and materials on that car.
Wow. So what would cause a gallon of paint to be $1,100? What material in it would cause it to be that expensive?
Well, best explanation I can get is the toners, really. The reds are typically the most expensive colors, and apparently it's the toner that makes it expensive.
Yeah, I've heard that red is the most expensive color, and if it's got any sort of shade of red in it, it's automatically higher.
Yeah, actually, funny enough, the one there's a color on a Chrysler called Mango Tango, which was like a pearl orange on the Chargers when they came out, probably, I guess like 2012 or 14.
Right on.
5 years ago, we did a Challenger, that color, early car, and it was $1,100 a gallon. 5 years ago.
Wow.
We did, yeah, so 3 gallons of color for the car, and the guy about fell off his perch. That was, you know, that was nothing else. $3,400 in just the color. Without anything else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's not the words he used, but it's...
yeah.
It's the PG version.
Didn't even rhyme with
it. Yeah, some of the basics. I mean, just like masking tape, you know, $5, $6, $7 a roll.
Yeah.
And we go through, on a big job, we'd probably be going through 10, 15 sleeves of three, you know, inch and a half tape, no problem.
Sleeves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of tape.
Yeah. Hey, primer, you know, some of the primers up to $400 a gallon.
Well, how's the waterborne paint compare to traditional paints as far as price?
He's making a face.
Do you want the PC answer? Or
As far as the price.
Oh, the price is actually cheaper than the preferred material.
I'm really surprised that a lot of painters haven't just moved over the border into Nevada or Arizona to paint.
Yeah, it's very tempting. Yeah, that's a sore subject for me, my shop.
It's not just about the paint either, is it?
Yeah.
What are you finding as a painter the most difficult? The difference between solvent-based and waterborne. What in the work that you do, is there something about a waterborne job that's more difficult, more time-consuming, less forgiving?
Actually, all of the above. Yeah, it's way more time-consuming for it to dry correctly between coats and before you were to go back in. And during the course of laying on a paint job, there's going to be you're going to get some dust or dirt in it and stuff that you want to go back in and denib and repair and spot, and that kind of stuff just goes on forever and doesn't always come out the right result for us. I'm not saying that it's not doable, but it's not a material that is easily workable.
Yeah. You know what surprised me about it when it came out is when the silvers and the golds and the metallics of that sort came out, color matching them, because when you're looking at a color before it's got clear on, it looks like a completely different color. I mean, it's not even close. I don't know how you get to color match an existing color that's on a fender and say you need to do a blend. I don't know how you do it.
Well, there is no choice. If you're going to do a fender on, let's just say, a silver car or a door, you're going to blend either side of it, and that's that. There is no.
Yeah, yeah. You got to go all the way from front to back, huh, just to kind of get it to lay in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a matter of course. If you tried to do the door, you'd be just screwing yourself heavily.
Yeah, and it's funny thing about it, you can see some cars in traffic. You'll be driving along and you'll see a car come by, and it looks like two different shades on the side of the car. The bumper is maybe a completely different color, and
Yeah, that's probably someone trying to make some bonus time there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it says it's the right color and the color mix is right. Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you had a paint type that you would prefer, are you prefer to spray a solid or a metallic?
I don't mind, really. It doesn't. If it works and suits the car, then I'm in on the color. It doesn't really matter what it is. I mean, for my own car personally, it would be a solid color just because it suits the era of the car better. My biggest peeve really is using the wrong type of material or color on the wrong car because it's what a customer wants.
I know exactly where you're coming from. I mean, sometimes you'll see a car that should have been solid and they paint into this strange metallic color. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work with the car.
Yeah. And when you know it, but that's what they want, it's tough because you've got to give them what they want.
Yeah.
But you know it's not the ideal way to go.
How much coaching do you do in that situation?
I'll offer my opinion, and I'll tell the customer, I'm going to give you an honest opinion. Might not be what you think, but I'm just going to say it, and that way you can't tell me I didn't tell you. But you can't force somebody.
Sure.
If that's what they've got their heart set on and they're paying the bill, then it's at the end of the day, it's their car, and that's what they want. That's what they get.
Certainly.
Yeah. It's like a couple of years ago, everybody was in love with that whole burnt orange pearl color. It was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And everybody thought, well, I'll just two-tone this car and I'll make it tan in that color. I'll make it gray in that color, or black in that color. It was awful. I mean, I'm so glad that color has kind of faded off into obscurity, because everybody was doing it, and and they were just convinced that they could two-tone with that color, and you just can't do it. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Some people just don't see it as wrong either. I had a customer we were doing a 32 Roadster for who wanted the car. If I remember right, he wanted orange and purple with two different types of flames over the top of it. And I just couldn't. And I told him, I can't do that. I'm just not going to – I can't consciously – roll over for that, knowing that when the car's finished in a year's time, when you roll it out, it's going to look like it's 20 years old already. Yeah. And you're going to pay a ton of money because it's a super involved process to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And thankfully, he got it, and we end up doing the car red with traditional flames-ish. and he loves it, and everybody's okay with it because it doesn't look too far out of bed. But the other way would have been, I wouldn't want my name on it or anywhere near it.
Yeah, Brad and I know of a car that was done by somebody a number of years ago where the guy wanted the top in the the burnt orange color, and he wanted the bottom in the blue color.
It was a year thing. It was the end of whatever it was.
Yeah, and this guy had convinced himself that, well, people are going to know that this is the last color you could get these things in blue, and this would be the first color that you can get. He had some analogy that he was using.
It was awful.
Yeah.
It was awful. I want to be judgmental.
It was the prettiest PT Cruiser at the cruise night, wasn't it?
It was a Chevy.
HHR.
SSR.
SSR. Of course it was.
SSR. It had airbrushed 57 Chevy trim on the side that they used with that chrome spray on it. It was chrome. The can says chrome paint on it, but we all know it doesn't even look close. It looks like bright silver.
Two colors did not work. And I don't want to pick on people.
It's just like,
it didn't work.
It's just one of those examples of, good quality paint job. It just, two colors, it just didn't work.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not uncommon.
Yeah. 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 And that's what the customer wanted. So he gave him what he wanted.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Are you seeing more of a trend right now of customers coming in wanting metallics or wanting solids? Because sometimes the colors come in and out, and there for a while, solids were super, super popular. And I think they still are. They're kind of still my favorite, but I'm starting to see some really subtle metallics starting to show up. Are you seeing that too?
Yeah, well, actually, I think since we've been doing stuff for Steve Strope, he's got a really good eye for color. And so I'd say half the cars we've done for him have been metallic. Pretty evenly matched, I think, between solids and metallics for us. Nothing jumping out particularly.
Yeah, I'm such a solid color snob that actually his cars are one of the few cars I see that actually gets a pass for being metallic. I love solid colors.
Yeah, I do too. But some of his choices, like the Fairlane we did, the blue and gold one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not colors I would have picked, but he trumped me on that thing because that came out perfect. It suits the backstory for the car and the era.
The car got a ton of press and a lot of awards too. It was a very popular car. I saw the same when I looked at it. I'm like, I just don't know about those two colors together. So I looked at it up close and I was like, it works because it's got the whole NASCAR, 60s NASCAR look to it.
Yeah.
And it works, because back in the day, those things had exterior colors were one color, then everything inside was a different color. And all the suspension pieces and everything bolted onto it were, different colors. And it actually worked.
Yeah. And I, unfortunately for me, or fortunately, whichever way, I have no history with NASCAR or any real knowledge of it. So he's explaining it to me, and I just could not, I just couldn't see it. I was like, just
oh, this was before you guys actually put color on a car. He was trying to explain what his intent was. Wow.
Yeah. Well, he told me what the he just told me what the colors were, and he had, you know, and I'm thinking, I just don't get this on any level. But now I've seen some of the cars that were originally that color scheme. It's okay. Now I get it, but I was late to the party.
That would be a tough one to convince somebody sight unseen. That would be a tough one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I struggled.
I got a question since it kind of pertains to paint, and it's always about hours. Everybody thinks, you know, guys, too expensive. It's just time. It's always just time. What is, if there's even a way to do an average, just to color sand and rub a car out? What are we talking time wise? Just color sand.
To the level that we're doing them at?
Yeah,
probably 3 weeks worth of work. Maybe more, just depending on what the car is and how involved it is.
That's kind of a weird way to, because there's lots of variables, but I'm just kind of curious what kind of time.
Yeah, I guess the easiest example, if it was a solid color on, say, a Mustang Fastback, I would say a minimum of 4 weeks.
Okay.
At 50 hours a week.
Just in the color sand and rub.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But that's the bit that really does make the difference at the end of the day. I mean, obviously, the prep work and the body work's got to be super straight, but the bit that's going to catch your eye first is the actual level of finish, and that is the color sanding.
And that would be like with doors off, you know, you would color sand and buff the jams, color sand and buff the jam portions of the doors and that sort of stuff, that as well?
Well, if you insist.
Okay. I didn't know whether that was part of it or not.
Typically. Okay. We do. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't get as much attention as the outside.
Sure.
It's a lot of work, and it's hard to appreciate it until you try doing it, because it's easy to go through the motions and say, yeah, I've used all the papers 1,000 through to 3,000. But if you're not looking at what you're doing, you're not getting deep enough in and taking the scratches out from the previous paper. And then you buff it, and it doesn't look any better than a quick job. So it's a real art form. I mean, anybody can color sand, but doing it right is a completely different ballgame.
It's a lot of time. I've done it a bunch, but I didn't, never done it where to your extent, where it's just this never ending. It's like this is never going to get done.
Yeah, I'm not capable of finishing anything to that degree.
Yeah, and once you have, you wonder why you did. But to kind of put a level on it, one of my guys who's this way inclined counted how many strokes he does with each grip, and it's about 100 strokes over any area with each given grip. So we start at, say, the courses we start is 800, and you go 1,000, 12, 15, lost it, 2,000, 25, and then 3.
So that many stages of sandpaper.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a lot of work. But that's the bit really is the crowning piece, if you like. If you get that wrong, the rest of it really doesn't matter. If it's orange peaty or doesn't have the depth of gloss, then everything else you did before that is a waste of time.
Right.
That's how I justify it anyway.
Well, it is what it is. It's all part of the process.
Yeah, you can't shortcut it.
And that's why you've got 3 GNRS winners under your belt.
Especially the first one, the black one. I mean, that's the one that really got us on the map, because that car was, it was close to perfect, and being black was hard to do, and everybody knew that. So,
right
from there, you can't go backwards.
You know, on some cars you see guys rub out, when they're doing the color sanding, they're just, color sanding it with a piece of paper and kind of working it back. You guys probably use blocks and things and shaped pieces to block at that point, don't you?
Yeah, you can't do anything without a block. If you color sand anything by hand, you're going to get ripples in it. You make ripples. Okay. I mean, you'll see finger patterns. Yes. It actually ends up translating through to the polished finish. So everything's done with blocks, and even we color sand with stones as well, which sounds a bit goofy, but there are color sanding stones.
Really?
Really?
Brad's looking at me a bit cross-eyed. No?
Really?
Wow, never heard of that.
I've seen like the little soft pads, the little, you know, no, they're in different grips. But there's
Meguiar's make sand in stones.
I've never seen those.
And if you want to work a surface to absolute perfection, they take every irregularity in the surface out. If you want it flat, somewhere in the process, you use a stone.
Wow.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that. I just gave away my secret.
You gave away a secret.
Damn it.
You want to do a mint quality paint job, you got to buy the rocks.
What I meant was,
yeah, you go to Home Depot, get some rocks.
Yeah, you got to. If you want to do his quality paint work, just throw rocks at it. Tell people that. That's what we do.
No, get stoned with it.
Oh, get stoned.
Yeah.
That's even better.
Stoned with the paint job. There you go. That makes
sense. The secret's out.
So is it what I've never seen? It's like pumice, or what is it? I mean, I've never. Is that kind of what it's like?
It's what it looks like, yeah, but it's harder. And there's a whole magic to using those things too, because you can do a ton
of
damage.
Go right through it with the freaking edge, I'm sure, if you weren't careful.
Yeah.
So it's actually a sanding stone, not a stone that you wrap your paper around, but you actually sand with the stone?
Yes. Wow. Yeah, it's a sanding stone, not a.
Well, it's the way I sharpen my knives.
Grits of it.
So.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah. But you've got to keep it clean as well. So you're sanding it with paper in between using it to sand paint. Otherwise, you might get build up a paint stuck in the stone and then cut great grooves in it.
I've seen Paco do
that
before.
Yes, I thought you probably would.
That's what he was doing. I was watching it. It's like, what is he sanding? He's like sanding his sandpaper. I couldn't figure out what he was doing. Okay.
Yeah. And it's only small. It's about probably, I don't know, 2.5 inches long, 1.5 inches wide. So if you're going to do a whole car, you better have your patience on.
Well, I was just thinking, I was feeling some brotherhood with that stone for a second. It's about 2.5 inches by 1.5 inches. Yeah, I know that. I try to keep mine clean, too.
Yeah, hopefully it's not flat
with the stone. I always wonder, with the stone, you just use water, or do you use some sort of a lubricating fluid to move it around? I mean, if just you just get it wet and use water, or do you use like some sort of a light soap?
Nice segue.
Baby shampoo and water? I don't know. I
mean, just regular water. We just use maybe a little bit of a soap in it, but not a lot. Not that you feel.
Yeah. Okay. Just enough to give it a little bit of
bit of extra glide.
Right. Yeah. You can feel a little bit in the water. The water's got a little bit of a different feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Wow. It's a real science to that stuff.
I just learned something I did not know.
Oh, you can leave the money on the table when you go.
Yeah.
Throw some in for me, Brad. I'll get you next Thursday.
Yeah, I'm sure. After Taco Tuesday, you won't have any money, Eric, anyway. So that's.
Well, that's the reason I said Thursday.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, now you're making me want to drive to Vegas.
Have we left anything out? Anything we want to ask him? We covered a lot about paint jobs there.
You know, I've got a question. If you're doing just a solid color, typically how many passes do you make? How many layers of paint do you, because a lot of guys say, I put 10 coats on the tops of the doors because my arm hangs out, things like that. But I put 4 coats on the outside of the doors. I mean, do you do it similarly, or do you do it even for a shelf car?
You always count coats.
Right.
Because if you're painting, let's just say it's a solid color and you're doing the doors and fenders separate from the body, sounds as strange as it sounds, there's a saturation point. You want to make sure you reach that and go past it, because when you color sand, obviously you're taking color off if it's a single stage solid color. Typically 4 to 5 coats minimum of color.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a base coat, with clear going over it, it'll be the same plus a little bit more, maybe 5 or 6 coats of clear over the top. Because the base coat color isn't as thick as a single stage solid color.
And do you do like a higher build, like on door tops and tops of fenders, things like that? Or I'd imagine at some point that's going to affect the color on a show car.
No, we don't really. If you've got, let's just say it's a metallic or a pearl, if you've got 6 coats of clear, you've got plenty of paint on there, even after color sanding. So, and if someone's hanging their arm over the top of one of our paint jobs, then he's got more money than sense.
With his metal watch banging against the door, right?
Yeah. Right. Yep.
So do you have a particular paint brand that you prefer, or do you use certain brands for certain things?
No, we stick. We always have used PPG. It's really people do bounce around, but you're kind of chancing your luck a little bit. At least if we use PPG and we use their system all the way through, it's a good solid guaranteed result. You're not going to have any issues with stuff reacting differently, or you know, different drying times, different methods that don't work for you until you've practiced or had a few runs at it. So no, we stick with PPG.
Okay. I figured, you know, being from Europe, I figured you would be a BASF guy, you know.
Like no, I used to be Sickens. Used to be a Sickens guy, but PPG, it works. I mean, it's a good product. Don't have any problems with it. Never have had a problem. Yeah. So we have tried other brands, but just haven't had the same degree of success. And it's awkward to start all over again, you know. As far as knowing what that paint does and how it reacts and how much build you get with it, just stick with a proven formula and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I've always heard that about PPG, that their colors and their clears are both good, whereas some brands, they may have one that's good and one that's not so good as far as color and clear.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing, if anybody's listening in and is thinking about painting the car themselves, just pay for the good stuff, because you'll pay double for the bad stuff. There's some of the cheap clears out there that have no UV protection in them. You know, you see the cars that go milky and stuff's burning off. That's the cheap stuff.
Buy once, cry once.
Yeah, but I mean, you'll save a bunch of money, but if you end up doing it twice or three times, it's going to cost you a shitload more. So,
right. Or if you compare clears and you pour them both into a clear glass and one looks yellow and one looks clear, you know, the cheap stuff looks yellowy. It even looks like in the cup, it's yellowy. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're doing that orange with tan two-tone, like you're going to do on your
truck,
it
works perfect because it gives it a burnished look. Yeah,
right, nice. Yeah.
And it'll burn off pretty soon as well, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. So nice. You'll get the patina thing. I mean, right off the bat, you'll get it. You don't want to color sand that one. Oh, there wouldn't be anything left.
Oh man!
Said it's an honor to be taken to school like that. Yeah. I feel like we kind of walked out of here with a much better understanding, you know. And as guys who kind of work in the field, you know, and do our thing with cars, anyways, having this much more knowledge is always scary. A plus. I really appreciate you know being so open and talking so candidly.
Yeah, I'll probably shit myself in the foot here. That was shot, by the way. Probably shot myself in the door.
But
the next customer who was headed for the door.
We're going to edit it down to like 3 minutes. It's literally just going to be it's going to be you talking about black paint. That's going to be the end of it.
Yeah.
That's all right with me.
Thank you very much for doing this again.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure. It's fun. It was good. Truly. Anytime.
We've got an hour with a world-class painter.
Custom painter.
Yeah, I noticed I didn't say custom painter. See,
thank you.
Now I did.
Yeah, that upsets the competition if you call me one of those, and I'm not one.
We need to wrap up here, but what is a custom painter, and why are you not a custom painter?
Custom painter is more someone who's doing graphics and flames and, you know, trick stuff, lowrider stuff. I would consider someone who does that as a custom painter.
Okay.
I just don't do that stuff, never have. I don't have the artistic flair to be laying that stuff out. That right there is a Bradles job. He's an artist and I'm just a painter. So,
just a painter.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, but not a Bondocelli. So that works out good.
Bondolero.
Nice.
Bondolero. I like this one.
Oh.
Well, awesome. I appreciate you joining us, and I really hope we can have you back at some point and kind of check in on you and pick your brain a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Love to do it.
Outstanding. Yeah.
some of your techniques on how we can lay down Zolotone and color sand and buff Zolotone?
Yeah, if you can so,
figure
yeah,
we're really going to pick your brain next time.
Go find it first.
Except that one, you start with 80 grit and you work your way down. That's a whole That's different the deal there.
Yeah. You end at 80 grit.
I finished polished.
Yeah.
Metal edge.
Wow, we could do that. Why don't we make that part of our show? We'll have a painter's challenge. We'll see who can, you know, cut and buff the, cut and buff, like, say,
Line X,
exactly. Nice bed liner.
I'm sure he's out there. Oh, just a quick story on that kind of note. I had a friend I sold a car to that I did back in 2000 for Buick for the SEMA show, and we put brushed wheels on it. Budnick made some brushed wheels, billet wheels, which were a bit different then, but very cool. Anyway, this guy takes it to the detailer, leaves the car there for the day, comes back, and it's got one half shiny wheel. And the guy assumed that the wheels were supposed to be polished, so he tried color sanding and buffing up one of his brush finish wheels.
Oh, that just hurts.
It probably hurt him trying to do it as well. I think he must have been on there for 12 hours.
With one of those little power balls. Remember those silly things?
Yeah.
That fit in your drill?
Yeah, he hadn't taken the wheels off the car, so he's been on his knees for half a day.
Oh, poor guy.
I want to feel
he was poor after he got the bill.
Jeez.
So what, did Budnick just go ahead and, you know, rebrush them? With how that process is, how they do it? Probably chuck it up
on a lathe. I guess that's probably
put in a lathe, grab a Scotch Brite.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
No, they get this guy's his non-twin brother. He comes over and kneels down by the car and brushes them.
And hope it matches the other three.
Is that the guy that stops at every green light because his brother might be coming the other way?
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you again, sir. I truly appreciate it. We like I said, we definitely look forward to having you back at some point. And man, I think on behalf of the rest of the guys here, I'd like to thank you so much for your time and just speaking so openly and kind of, you know, answering a lot of our questions.
Yeah, that's great. I enjoyed it, and I'll be happy to do it again.
Beautiful.
Yeah, if you can come up with some different questions next time.
Oh, we will.
We'll talk about upholstery next time. We won't talk
about it. Yeah, we'll really throw it.
Yeah,
we never really cover what your favorite color is. We just, you know, we know that you paint your cars black, but, you know, we can get into that.
Okay, well, I think you've got the answer already.
We can rehash it, can't we?
Yeah, sure.
Another day.
All right, well, I think we're good.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity. It was good fun.
Thanks, mate.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure, mate.
Thank you, sir, very much.
All right.
Hey, as we always do at the end of each episode, thanks again to our guest, Mick Jenkins, who was just obviously spectacular, as you know, from listening to us. And you can find out more about Mick at mixpaint.com. On behalf of the rest of the crew here, as always, at the end of the episode, I'm still Brian.
I'm still Brad.
I'm still Alex.
And I think I'm still Eric.
And I'm still here.
Nice. Beautiful. That was
weird. All right, guys. Are we good?
And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Round 6 Podcast.
Thanks again for listening, and be sure to keep up with us gearheads over on our website at www.round6pod.com. And if you'd like to, be sure to follow along with us over on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Subscribers to our e-newsletter have access to expanded content such as tutorials, uncut interviews, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes footage. It costs nothing to subscribe, and you can do so over on our website at www.round6pod.com.
Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Brad.
I'm Alex.
Mick.
Oh, no.